See you, Daryl. The Sixers said goodbye to Daryl Morey yesterday. Welcome back. Midday Show, Hugh Douglas, Joe Giglio. We're saying goodbye to Daryl Morey. If you missed it earlier, we will replay the montage of the best moments of the last 6 years of Daryl Morey's tenure coming up, excuse me, a little bit on the show. So we'll get to that. Your phone calls on all things Morey, the Sixers, and if you agree or disagree that Kyle Schwarber is the best home run hitter in Philly's history. I believe he is. This, what we're watching here, I think we're almost downplaying it. We'll get back to all that, but Hugh, let's go out to the guest line here. We haven't talked to this guy in a couple weeks. He wasn't here last week, but he's back now.
He went on vacation, didn't he?
That's Elliott Shore Park, sponsored by Cozy Jewelers. Step up to the fifth seed. That's Color, Cut, Clarity, Carrot, and Cozy. Speaking of, not really a vacation, but a trip, you know, there's some rumors out there. I mean, we know Elliott will be with the Eagles when they go to London to take on the Jaguars October 11th. Sounds like the Midday Show might be traveling out with you, Elliott. Elliott, how are you doing today?
Wait a minute. Who said that?
Oh, well, it's happening.
Wait a minute. Who did that? Wait a minute. When did that happen?
If I learned, Hugh seems surprised by this at this point.
Well, he has travel anxiety. That's what happens.
Hugh just started paying attention to the show.
Yeah. Well, I learned from my trip to Kansas City with you that there's one way to help that travel anxiety in the airport before.
The bar. Yeah, we'll hit the bar.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah.
Wait, how long is that trip,
I'm sure there'll be some pints there.
How long's the trip, Elliott? Flight? 5 hours? 6 hours? How long take to get out there?
Yeah, it's about six and a half.
Okay.
I think it's a little shorter one way than the other, but it's not bad. I've done it many times. You can put a movie on, you know, get the Odyssey app going. It'll be fine.
All right. Well, yeah, we will definitely have the Odyssey app. All right, Elliott, we got a lot to talk about here. It's like 2 weeks of catch up with you. Let's start with this. The schedule is coming out in pieces. Obviously, we're having fun here with the idea of what we found out this morning. You know, officially, Eagles, Jaguars in London on October 11th. We also know the Eagles will be in Dallas on Thanksgiving. So your thoughts on what we know already of the schedule, specifically that Dallas Thanksgiving trip?
Yeah, so I think getting Dallas on Thanksgiving is actually probably the best possible time they could have gotten them. You could argue, you know, maybe like 1 o'clock, but whenever they play Dallas, it seems to be either like 4:30 or at night or something like that. And they always get smoked, right? It feels like they struggle in Dallas. Last year they lost there. I know Thanksgiving's also a primetime game, but I would just rather play them on that day than on Sunday night or Monday night football. So I think that's like a relatively good spot to get them. They are 2-0 in Dallas on Thanksgiving, the last one being with Mark Sanchez as quarterback, so it's been a while, but they are undefeated in Dallas on Thanksgiving, so I think that's a good spot. As far as going to London, you know, the Jaguars were a better team last year. I don't think they have any type of advantage in London. You know, they don't really have real fans, so I'm sure there'll be more Eagles fans there than there will be Jaguars fans, so
Definitely.
It'll probably feel like a home game. And I think getting it early in the year, I'm assuming they'll have the bye afterwards. It's a good time to get the bye. So I think that's a good spot of the schedule as well.
The one thing I would, Elliott, I would look out for, and I haven't seen it officially yet, because you were talking about, I don't think the Jaguars have an advantage in London, and I would generally agree with you. But I have noticed in recent years, sometimes they'll play back-to-back games there. And I'm not sure if they're going to do that this year, and if the Eagles would be the front
they
end
are.
Of that. Okay, do you know?
And the Eagles are the front end.
Okay, well then that's not a big deal. What I was thinking was if it's when they play the second straight game there, right, and their bodies have been acclimated for 2 weeks, and then a brand new opponent comes in, I would guess over time that second game is probably an advantage. But if it being the first one, that's better for the Eagles.
Yeah, and that's one thing to keep an eye out for with this. When the Eagles traveled to Brazil back in 2024, I think they went 2 days early, but that was only a 1 hour time difference, 2 hour time difference, if I remember. This one will be more drastic. It's a shorter flight, but I think it'll be 4 or 5 hours, depending. I can't remember if they do daylight savings time or not, but it is. It'll be a bigger time difference. In 2018. They went out and practiced there, I think, 2 days. So when they go out to London will be, you know, noteworthy as well.
Elliott, before we see the whole picture, and it's coming together a little bit by little bit here, and tomorrow night we'll have the full picture, what is your thought on their opponents just overall? I mean, you did the mock schedule, so you kind of have a clear picture of who they're facing. We were talking a little bit about this yesterday. Although the Eagles have a first-place schedule, they kind of lucked out in some ways, just the way some of the divisions that match up with the East fell last year. Like, just for instance, the Eagles or the NFC East will play the NFC North this year. The Eagles obviously match up with the first place team. That's the Bears. All right, they're probably going to be pretty good again. But like the Lions finished in last place. The Lions could definitely be a good team again.
Much better team.
So when you think about strength of schedule, that's a negative, I guess, for the Giants who finished in last. So just overall, the way the opponents fell, how do you feel about the slate of teams they're going to play?
Yeah, another advantage, the Eagles get the Steelers, whereas the second-place team gets the Ravens.
That's
a big
difference,
yeah. The Ravens will be a much better team than the Steelers this year. I think the slate of opponents, you know, with the obvious caveat of you never know until the game comes, like, I think it's kind of extremes, right? Like, there's a lot of really winnable games on there. The Colts, the Texans, the Jags, the Steelers, like, all those teams have varying degree of argument for being a good team. But I think the Eagles are a better team than all of those teams right now. The Panthers at home, like, that's a winnable game. The Cardinals on the road, another winnable game. But the flip side of that is they have the Niners, they have the Rams, they have the Seahawks, and they have Chicago, who I all think going into this season probably deserve to be ahead of the Eagles on any power ranking. I think they're close to some of them. I think Seattle could obviously have a Super Bowl hangover, which we've seen in Philadelphia the past two times they've gone. But those are four really hard games. Now, of those games, though, you get the Rams at home, and you know, I think you get Seattle at home. So you get some of those good teams in Philadelphia. So I think it's a manageable schedule. And as you go through the list of opponents, it's probably somewhat of a reminder that, you know, the Eagles still enter this season as one of the better teams in the NFL.
All right, Elliot. So tomorrow when the schedule comes out in full, the thing I'm going to be looking at most especially is what the first four line up as, who they are, where they are, how many road games they have, because it's a brand new offense, right? It's brand new scheme for Jalen Hurts. I think it is pretty fair to think it might take a little time for this thing to get rolling this season on the offensive end. So I'd like to have some easy opponents early. Elliot, when you made your mock schedule, what went into the way you kind of were lining up? Was it Arizona week one you kind of gave him? Was it Indianapolis, Arizona? One of those two.
I think it was Indianapolis week one, Arizona week two, the Giants, if I remember correctly, week three. I 100% agree with you. Like, I think they should. Oh, and I had the London game actually week four, but I had them versus Washington. So if you look at the first month of the season, I 100% agree with you. I think you want to have bad teams early. I'll take a gauntlet late once I've gotten 8, 9, 10 games under my belt with the new offense. Nick's teams normally start well. So, you know, I do think, like, even if it was tough opponents, there's a real world where they could still start strongly. They have a history of doing that. But I think all special seasons mostly start with a really good start to the season. Like, you can tell, you know, relatively soon. So I think getting an early start, getting bad defenses, getting the offense a chance to kind of get used to this new offense in real games, because we know they probably won't play much in the preseason. I'm sure that'll be a fun debate. But, I do think you want an early start to the season.
You know, ESP, you know, we was talking about your list, and I know you're all getting ready for excited about football season and everything, but I also saw your ESP's top 10 Eagles list.
Yes.
And I'm just curious. I mean, I don't have a problem with your list, but I'm kind of curious, why did you fall the way that you fell with the top 10 Eagles?
Yeah, so, you know, I think, first of all, it was a good reminder that the Eagles have a lot of talent, right? Like, they do have a very talented roster. In terms of how I landed on different guys at different spots, like, I think Jalen Hurts deserves to be number one. He's the quarterback of the Eagles. He's won a Super Bowl MVP. He's probably the best quarterback in franchise history, and he's still one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. So I think he belongs at that top spot. I think he's earned that top spot. Mm-hmm. You know, another one that was noteworthy, I would say, Jalix Hunt at number four. I'm high on Jalix Hunt. I think he was a top 15 edge in the NFL last year. He led the team in sacks, tackles for a loss, and interceptions. And I think the arrow is very much pointing up on him, right? I think he is a young player that definitely could be even better next season. But guys like Saquon Barkley, I didn't have Saquon in my top 10. He's coming off a disappointing season. We know the history of running backs that have a ton of touches one in 1 year, which he had in 2024. Like, they don't usually bounce back and have great years.
Yeah, they don't age well. Saquon, I get that. Yeah.
So Saquon's been a tremendous Eagle. I think he's a great leader on the team, but I think on a very talented roster, I would not have him in my top 10.
All right. So I saw it like everyone else, and I had a lot of questions about it. You explained a lot of your methodology there. So I guess a couple things. I don't. One thing that I saw a lot of people were thinking you were crazy for, and I don't think you're crazy, and I don't know if I'd have him for it. Elliot, I don't think the Jalex Hunt ranking is insane. I mean, he was really good last year, and he's getting better here. And, you know, whether he's four or six, I'm cool with that. I think Jalex Hunt's one of their better players. That was good. I guess for me, how much did you weigh Hurts' resume versus last season? Because there's just no way off of last season he's the best player on the team.
So I don't think that's true, number
but
one.
But he didn't play He didn't play well last season.
Well, but he was probably their best player on offense, right? Like, you could argue Devontae.
Well, but it was a bad offense.
But he was still the best player on the offense. I'm not ranking best offensive players in the NFL. I'm ranking the best Eagles.
No,
right?
No, I know. So, but if they had a bad offense and a really good defense, and we give the best player on the bad unit the best ranking on the team, like their defense was their strength, not their offense.
I agree. The defense was the strength. But again, I'm ranking players, not units. And Jalen's job is way harder than Quinyon Mitchell's job, right? Like, Quinyon's job is hard. Being a corner in the NFL is not easy. I had Quinyon number two. But Jalen Hurts plays on the more important side of the ball. And yes, they struggled. But one of the reasons they were even a competent offense was because of Jalen too, right? Like, he had a better year than the offensive line. He had a better year than Saquon. He had a better year than AJ. You could argue Dallas Goedert had a better year than him because he led the team in touchdowns. But who's throwing him all those touchdowns? So Jalen had a career high in passing touchdowns, I believe. Like, so he had a relatively good year. Now, he didn't have a great year, and there were definitely weeks where the offense struggled because of him, but he's the most important player on the team. And yes, resume matters. He has the toughest job in the city, and he's done it at an elite level. So yeah, I think all that adds up to him being number one.
How close were Quinyon and Cooper to being flipped? I thought those two next to each other was perfect, like, because I think they belong next to each other wherever they go on the list.
Symbiotic.
Elliot, I think there's a case to be made that Cooper is the better player because of he provides something on the against the run and the pass. While Quinyon, you know, is obviously excellent, but, you know, more of just a cover corner. How close was that for you?
So, I mean, they're both excellent players. I think Quinyon is maybe not a full level above Cooper, but he is a number one outside corner that shuts down number one receivers. Like, I know Cooper is helpful against the run. He goes up against number one receivers in the slot. He's made big plays against number one receivers. So he clearly is an elite player as well. But there's just a difference. And that difference is going to be an interesting one to see discussed a year from now because they're both going to be contract, eligible for a new deal. Quinyon's going to get paid. If Quinyon has a year, anything close to the past 2 years he's had, he might be the top paid player. Maybe not in all of the defensive, you know, players in the league, but he'll probably be the number one corner. Cooper, that's a different discussion. Like, nickel corners don't get paid anywhere close to what outside corners get. So I get your point, and I do think he's an obvious, like, obviously an outstanding player that makes plays. But what Quinyon does is just valued more in the league.
Elliot, if you had to go back and change something, or you think like 6 months from now, you'd be like, yeah, I missed that one. Like, what was the one that had you like, I don't know what to do with this player? Is it Saquon out of the list or something else?
So I think Saquon has a chance for sure. If the offensive line is better, if the offense is clicking, I think Saquon showed he has, you know, he still has that burst to an extent. So I could definitely end up looking really silly with Saquon. But I think the player is Jonathan Greenard. I almost put him on the list, but since he's never played for the team yet, and there were a lot of other good options, I didn't end up putting him number 10. But Greenard could end up top five. I mean, he was 2 years ago one of the best edges in football. I think he probably is the best edge right now. Like, Jalex Hunt, I think, has more upside than Greenard. But Greenard has clearly accomplished things that Hunt has not. So I think, you know, this time next year when I put my list out again, I think there's a good chance Greenard will be really high on it.
I think Devontae's in the top three next year when you do your list, if I had a guess. I'm just looking at guys that can move up.
I don't. And like all this,
well, he's going to be the number one receiver on the team.
Yeah, he already gets 120 plus targets a year. Let's not act like he's some hidden weapon that's yet to be discovered.
Well, but he can also get better. He can improve.
Well, Jackson Smith and Jigba was sort of a quote unquote by that logic, hidden weapon behind DK Metcalf.
Yeah, but that's fair. I mean, look, we'll see. Like, I think Devontae is an excellent player. I think he's probably a top 11-ish player at his position in the NFL. But I like this idea that he's just going to, you know, have a massive leap forward this year. Like, I'll believe when I see it. It's nothing against him as a player. He's just already very involved in the offense.
It sounds
right?
like you don't have faith in the number one player on the team to have as good of a year as Sam Darnold did throwing to JSN.
No, I think they'll spread the ball around. I think Wicks is going to get the ball. I think Mekhi Lemon is going to get the ball. Like, those are other things to consider. Everyone that thinks all these AJ targets are just going to go to Devontae,
I agree. But the way maybe I'm wrong on this, Elliot. I view it as like all those receivers will get targets and snaps, but the one constant will be him. Like, he'll be on the field every play.
He'll be the dude that gets the most balls.
And then Wicks will be a guy that is the number two some weeks. Some weeks it's Lemon. Some weeks maybe Hollywood. Like, I just feel like Devontae is the constant. I think he should be, at least.
Yeah, and look, this will be the first year where coverages, presumably, we'll see if he garners that respect, but like if coverages roll towards him, right? Like, he'll have the number one guy every week. So it's going to be a different year for Devontae. Again, I think Devontae is an awesome player. Maybe a year from now I'll look silly for saying this. I just think, like, the idea his numbers are going to skyrocket. I mean, he already gets 1,000 yards every year. He already gets a decent amount of touchdowns. He gets a lot of targets. So maybe he will. But I think the other guys are going to clean up the AJ stuff more than Devontae.
It'll be fun to watch. Elliot, we appreciate you hopping on, and we will talk to you next week.
Appreciate you.
Yep. Look forward to that trip together. It's going to be fun.
Can't wait. It's going to be great. There he goes. Elliot Shore Parks with us there. All right. We haven't had our chance to unpack Elliot's list. We just asked him some pointed questions about it. Hugh, your reaction to ESP's Top 10 Eagles. So if everyone missed it out there, this was ESP's rankings. You probably kind of heard some of the way we were talking about. Hurts 1, Quinyon Mitchell 2, Cooper DeJean 3, Jalix Hunt 4, Lane Johnson 5, Jalen Carter 6, Jordan Mailata 7, Devontae 8, Jordan Davis 9, Zach Bond number 10, no Saquon Barkley at all on the list.
I don't have a problem with putting Jalen number one.
Well, I mean,
you should.
I mean, come on.
Well, Jalen's the most important player.
But that's
on the
not
field.
What the list
that's
was.
Not the
it's
list.
The best Eagles.
I mean, I hear it, but I think he's playing semantics a little bit with
but
that.
But sometimes I think we go too far with that idea of the quarterback's the best because he's the most important.
Well, he's the most important on the field. So. Now, I don't know. Right, like, so, that.
But who's
that?
Geno Smith was the most important player on the Seahawks a few years ago.
I'm talking about Geno Smith. I'm talking about Jalen.
No, but your point is that the quarterback's most important.
Let me get a question. Who's the best player on the Falcons? It's an easy answer.
I would probably say right now, Bijan Robinson.
Yeah, but by that logic, we have to give it a Penix or two. The quarterback's the most important.
Oh, no.
It's the same concept.
No, but we don't even know. Like, if you're asking me the most important player on the Falcons, it's the quarterback.
That's not the question.
No,
Elliot ranks the best Eagles.
It's kind of what Elliot's doing. I'm speaking Elliot for y'all. I'm just telling y'all.
We want your opinion. You to tell me what you think.
What I think?
Yeah.
I wouldn't have him at number one.
Well, he's not the best player.
I would have him probably at two or three, respectfully. Okay. But when I look at this list, Jalix Hunt to me is a lot. Jalen Carter should be higher than Jalix Hunt.
Okay.
I will say that. Jalen Carter should be higher than Jalix Hunt.
I think Quinyon's the best player on the team. He was as of last. Like, if we're doing.
I think Quinyon
Mitchell the best player. See,
best
I don't know. Cause I
he was
feel,
the best player last year.
I feel like Cooper DeJean's the best player.
No, Quinyon's better than Cooper.
I feel like, because here's where I'm rooted at in this. Because I've always was told in the NFL, the more you can do, the longer – I'm looking at the longevity of the position. Like, Coop is in a unique spot where he can play multiple positions.
But he didn't really play multiple positions last year.
But he can.
Well, he did go outside in the Dallas game. It didn't work out great, but he gave them a game outside corner.
Hold on. The best – that a cornerback covering Jamar Chase's of the world, the Justin Jeffersons of the world – is so much more valuable and so much better
it is,
than being the slot guy.
Well, hold on. I agree. But we don't do that as much as we say we do. Remember week one when Dory Jackson was getting crushed by the Cowboys because they had CeeDee Lamb on him and CeeDee dropped the ball? Like, Vic doesn't do that now, I think Quinyon could handle it if he asked him to do it more. It feels like we only do that sometimes.
Guys,
He's not going with the number one receiver.
Walk with me here.
Yeah.
Both of them eligible to get an extension today. Who gets more money?
Well,
Quinyon.
Well, that's the question because.
Well, if you tell me I can only keep one, though, I seriously consider keeping Cooper DeJean. No.
But that's the question because what is Coop agent going to say he is? You know?
Well, he's going to try to get corner money.
He's going to try to get corner
They're going
to
say you're getting slot money.
Yeah, he can try. Yeah.
He'll probably get it.
He hasn't played outside.
All right.
He's more versatile. And that makes him, to me, more valuable.
Okay, so number one, Jalen's
Quinyon's going to get paid more.
You're probably right. Jalen's not the best player on the team. Let's just stop.
No, he's not.
After the year he had last year, he's just no way. I think Quinion and Cooper, it's a fun debate, and they both, Hugh, to your point, belong near the top, right? I'm good with Elliott on that.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
a little high for Jalik Hunt. I don't know what you do with Lane Johnson. He barely played last season. Are we, like, is that just...
Well,
that's
legacy right there.
Are we just grandfathering him in?
Well, yeah, that's legacy. Okay. I would say with Lane, that's legacy.
I think there's one guy that gets grandfathered in, it's Lane.
Well, I know. I agree. I still don't know where you put him on the list, right? Like, I don't know.
It's tough.
That's it's an interesting list.
Saquon's got to be on the list. He's all. He went from being the best player in the league to not a top 10 player on his own team. Remember last year, the NFL players voted him the number one player in pro football.
He was special, but unfortunate
that
thing.
That feels like a big...
How do you leave him off after a down year if Jalen's going to be number one after a down year?
Well, Elliot tried to tell us Jalen's year wasn't that bad.
Right. Oh, it wasn't. That's right. Okay.
It wasn't good.
He's never going to have the year that he had when he first got here.
Oh, I agree with that.
And, and he's never going to be looked at like that, but he's still a good running back. To leave him off the list... You're right. He shouldn't be off the list. If anything, he should be 10 on the top 10 list.
Well, saying Goddard and Jonathan Greenard are better is clinically
and that's
insane.
Why it's Elliott's list, and like
Stop
I said,
defending him.
What do you mean? I mean,
we're ripping the list apart.
What are you doing?
He's off the phone now. Say what you feel.
What would be the Hugh Douglas list without knowing what Elliott's was?
What would be my list? Ooh. That would be kind of hard to do because I know how important. My list would be different because it would probably be more defenders at the top.
I thought defense is a luxury.
Well, no, they pay him like it's not a necessity.
And well, not Greenard. They gave him a lot of money.
You heard Elliott say that they played the most important positions on the field. He's talking about offense. He's talking about the most important people on the field, offense. Mm-hmm. But it would probably be more Jalen Carter would probably be a little bit higher at the top. Because he's the straw that stirs the drink,
although,
in my opinion.
He didn't have a good season.
He didn't, Joe, but he still commands that respect in that middle of that defense that allows Jalik Hunt and those other guys to do what they do on the edges. Like, he's the catalyst for that. That's the part of the game that a lot of people don't see because they don't. The numbers aren't going to be there to show you. I would probably have Jordan Davis a little bit higher. You know, it's funny. Me and Ike were talking one day, and he said something – that if Jordan Davis had Jalen Carter's mentality, we'd be talking about him differently.
Yeah, well, of course.
We'd be talking because he has a lot of athletic ability. Both of those tackles have a lot of athletic ability. So if it was me, they would probably be higher on the list than what they were.
Yeah, it's actually a challenging list to make. I'll give Elliott some slack on this. This particular list, this particular year coming off of last year is challenging. Usually, I would say Lane and Jalen Carter would be the easy ones to put near the top. They both were injured last year and didn't play great, right? Like, they just didn't have their best season.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to drop them down. I still would have Saquon on the list, and Jalen just can't be one. I think one is between Quinion and Cooper. They both were first-team All-Pro. How many Eagles were first-team All-Pro last year? Were they the only two?
It sounds like about – where was your boy, Zach?
I don't think he was first-team All-Pro last year.
Okay.
I think based on last year, Quinion and Cooper are the two best Eagles as we enter this season. 215-592-9494. All right, we'll get to everyone's phone calls here. Daryl Morey, the Sixers. Morey out. Finally, the Sixers do something right here. Is the glass half full or half empty for you for this basketball team moving forward as they go into their search? I'm at the point now where I believe Kyle Schwarber is the best home run hitter to ever wear a Phillies uniform. This is remarkable what we're watching. 17 home runs already this season. He's on pace for 65. We're having fun with the idea of could he track down Barry Bonds with 73? This is insane we're watching. Agree, disagree on where Schwarber now ranks in Phillies history for home run hitters. We'll get to everyone's phone calls. And Flyers spoke yesterday for the final time this season. We'll get to the notable stuff that was said, including Michkov on his relationship with the team and more. Midday Show, Sports Radio. I'm glad we played it one more time. You know, we kind of lost it. We had it as a weekly thing on the show, a couple times a week sometimes. It's a good song. It just really is.
Yeah.
It hits every time.
Yeah.
At least I know you like this song. A lot of the other songs we played.
This was all right.
I think it's better than all right. It's really good. It's better than that. All right, welcome back. Midday Show. Hugh Douglas, Joe Gillette. We're going to get to some of what was said yesterday. Flyers kind of have their exit press conferences. We'll hear from Michkov, Dan Vladar, and also what Rob Brindamore said on the ice on Saturday night to Rick Tocchet. We all saw it, and we're kind of thinking what might have been said there, but we have the audio of it. We'll get to that coming. Let's get back to the phone lines here. 215-592-9494. That's how you join the show. We've talked about a lot today. This segment, of course, sponsored by Meineke. Get your vehicle ready for summer driving, brakes, tires, batteries, and complete auto care by trusted local experts. Meineke, doing car care right. Let's talk to Dennis in Newtown, who is up on WIP. Hey, Dennis.
Dennis.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. How we doing?
What's up, Dennis?
Good, Dennis. What's going on? What are you thinking?
So half empty. I just don't think there's much that can be done with these contracts and this team. You know, when I look at the Flyers, and believe me, I was down on the Flyers, still am a little bit, but you know, the one thing they have from the chairman down to the coach are people in leadership positions that connect with Philadelphia. Dan Hilferty was the chairman of Blue Cross Blue Shield. Jonesy played for the Flyers. You got Briere played for the Flyers, and so did Tockett. And I think that bought that franchise a little bit more time. I look at the owner of the Phillies. He's connected, right? He's connected to Philly. He's in the community. So is the chairman. So is Jeffrey Lurie. But I don't see this chairman. I don't see this owner anywhere like that. And I think that that has a lot to do with the fan base that disconnects and, you know, gets rid of their tickets to fund next year's season ticket increase. And I just don't think I kind of think the Sixers may want to look at that template a little bit closer.
Dennis, I agree. I mean, look, I think there's it's I think you're totally right. Like, people connect with, they believe in, they feel like they care like we care with the other teams and not with the Sixers.
Yeah, that makes a big difference.
Now, I think there's a fine line. Like, you don't want to just hire, like, a former Sixer or someone.
I agree.
Just because, right, the Flyers got into trouble for doing that for years. But
I agree. Yeah, I don't disagree. Got to be the right person.
It has to be. But I think that counts. It counts what you're saying, Dennis. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the other thing I'll say to you, and then I'll get to Schwarber real quick, and then I'll let you go. I don't know. Who's the general manager of the Boston Celtics?
Well, it's Brad Stevens now, because Stevens went upstairs after being the coach for a little
while. Yeah. But what's his pedigree? He was a college basketball coach.
Oh, yeah. And then an NBA
coach.
He
transitioned to the pros.
Yep.
He knows how to put a team together. I don't know. You know, I'm going to say a name that's been bannered about forever. And I don't know if this individual would be interested in this position as opposed to coaching. And that's Jay Wright. I mean, why wouldn't he want to do this? Maybe not. I don't know. Just throwing it out there. But that's a connection to Philadelphia. That's a connection to the community in Philadelphia.
Sure is. What do you think about Schwarber?
Well, you know what? Can I ask a question? Because I don't know the answer to this.
Mm-hmm.
All these home runs he's hitting this year, how many has he hit with runners on base?
Well, considering he only has 28 runs batted in with 17 home runs, can't be that many. I mean, the numbers say it can't be that many.
So I don't think I can disagree with you, Joe, that he probably will become the all-time, you know, home run leader and hitter. But I don't know what he's doing for the team. You know what I mean? I don't know how that contributes to making that team better. I think he probably should be batting fourth to get more people on base before he starts banging that ball.
Yeah, a lot of people feel that, Dennis. And I get it. And, Dennis, good phone call, man.
That's been a conversation been had for the last couple of years.
So right? Whether or not you agree or not, to me that's separate from, is he the best home run hitter, right? Like, but that's not his fault where he hits in the lineup. He's just swinging the bat.
He's doing what he's doing.
He just swings the bat and hits home runs, right? How impactful they are. And, you know, to go back to the Howard thing, right, Hugh, because I think most people that would either not want to yet agree with this or are disagreeing with it would say, Howard's contributed to a World Series, right? And that's totally true. Like, the Howard era was better than this era. Howard contributed to more, you know, a World Series, to back-to-back, you know, in the World Series, winning two straight NL pennants. But it's case to me, being great at one particular thing in a sport has nothing to do with winning. Like, it's just, like, to me.
And that's fair, but you got to understand, when you're talking about fandom and the way people look at things, they can't separate the two.
But I think you can.
I mean, you can, but most people don't do that, Joe.
But I mean, they're not the same. Like, who had a better run versus who's the better at this just one thing?
Well, and for me, like I said, it's because he was an everyday player. He was an everyday player. And a part of the things that we remember about him are the contributions that he made to get them to the World Series. And I think that's where it's hard for people to separate the two. I get exactly what you're saying, because you're talking about pure at the plate.
Home runs.
You know, knocking the ball out of the park. But for me, it's hard to take away that aspect of what Ryan is. And not only that, knowing the road that he came up and how he got here and how he became that folk hero for many people here, it's kind of hard to separate that for me. So that's why I kind of give it to Ryan.
If Schwarber breaks all the records, then what?
If he breaks all the records, then Reinhardt would still be the better hitter to me.
What, better home run hitter?
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but most of my rants and my arguments don't make sense. Okay. They make sense.
But isn't home run hitting about hitting home runs?
But what I'm trying to tell you is it's about hitting home runs, but it's also about your fandom and how it made you feel in that moment. Because that when we talk about fandom, that's what we're talking about. I was hearing, as a matter of fact, when I went down a rabbit hole the other night, was listening to Rich Paul talk about the difference between LeBron James and Michael Jordan. And the gist of his argument was this, and what made made LeBron better, was that he said, not verbatim, but ad-libbing, that LeBron made players around him better. He said Michael Jordan was more of the Mamba mentality, the killer, the one that's going to take the shot and is going to take over the game. And I was thinking to myself, okay, but that's what we remember about Jordan, what makes him so great in our eyes is that because he did stuff like
so
that.
So I understand. So a lot of fandom and arguments and debates is subjective, right? It's how you feel, how you remember things, and that's fine. But at some point, the objective has to follow into the conversation. Like, if Kyle Schwarber hits 74 home runs this year and breaks Barry Bonds' record, it's not even a question. He's a better home run hitter than Ryan Howard and Mike Schmidt and anyone that ever wore the uniform.
That's where I think you're wrong when it comes to fandom. Fandom is what you believe it to be in your fandom.
No, but again, but there you're right. But there is some objectivity that goes into it.
Our question is, who are you a bigger fan of?
No, it's not.
Who's the better home run hitter?
To me, it's Ryan Howard, and I've said it three or four times.
Now, the objective thing that you gave that was kind of a needling at Schwarber, but I think you have a fair point. Is he played the field every day, so he had to put his body out there, and
and that's why his body broke. That's why Ryan's probably his body broke
so
down.
So it's fair, but just because he made you happier in 2008 doesn't mean he's a better home run hitter. Like that, to me, that part doesn't.
Michael Jordan's the best player of all time, but Steph Curry is a better 3-point shooter than Michael Jordan
by a lot.
But he's not considered. But
that's my point. Even the biggest Chicago Bulls fan would have to relent that Curry's a better 3-point shooter than Michael Jordan.
I think when you talk about Michael Jordan and you say the greatest of all time, you talk about everything that comes with Michael.
But he wasn't.
But Curry's a better 3-point shooter.
Okay, but he's not considered the greatest of all time.
Right? No, you're making my point. Howard was a better player than Kyle Schwarber. I think is a better home run hitter.
Again, your fandom to me. Your fandom is whatever it is that makes you feel good. That's why it's called fanatic.
But that's not the question. We're not asking who you're a bigger fan of.
Every time you ask me this question, and I always answer it the same way.
That's your problem.
I said, to me, this is what it is. And I give you the reasons why, to me, that it's important.
You're saying who you're a bigger fan of, which is fine.
No, I'm telling you, and I gave you a reason why I feel like Ryan's the better hitter.
But not hitter.
Better hitter.
Home run hitter. Okay,
home run hitter. Ryan's the better home run hitter.
Why? Because you're a bigger fan of him?
No, because he played the field.
Okay. But that's not hitting home runs.
And what he did, along with hitting a home run, more impressive.
I'll give you, there is something to, maybe it probably is, right? And it actually, more than probably, it's almost definitely easier if you get the fielding off to continue as just a hitter. I mean, if David Ortiz had to play the field, he probably would have fallen off quick. Schwarber has become our version of Big Poppy. DFA'd, people thought he was done, and then he became an all-timer. Like, that's great.
But Jordan's not a better three-point shooter than Steph because he has a better mid-range game than Steph.
No, he's not. He's not.
Those two things don't. They have nothing to do with each other.
Right now, the numbers.
No, but it's like when you pick.
But playing
you pick
the field,
out,
I get that.
Yeah. No, but you pick out one aspect of the game and say, "Oh, well, Steph Curry was better than him."
But that is our question.
That's the discussion,
and that's why I'm trying to tell you to me, because Ryan was able to do all of that. To me, he's the better hitter because he put more wear and tear on his body. Because you don't understand what I'm saying.
He's a better hitter.
He was a better player than Schwarber.
Better baseball player than Schwarber. And hit 313 in a year. Not a better home run hitter.
And again, to me, he was because of all that other stuff that was in that he had to do that Schwarber didn't have to.
You know what, Hugh? To me, Bryce Hoff is a better player than Reggie White.
And you know what? If that's how you feel, that's how you feel.
No. That's why I'm trying to say it's because we have to have some level of objectivity.
You know why Bryce Hoff is a better player? Because he's saving the world.
I think
Now you can make an argument.
He's saving the world.
Now you can make an argument. Like the argument is, would you rather have a Bruce Smith or Reggie White? Now I can make that argument. To me, Bruce Smith had more sacks, but Reggie White was the more complete player.
That's Schwarber and Howard. But listen to what I'm saying.
But to me, Bruce Smith was the better overall defensive end. You see what I'm saying?
Than Reggie White?
Yeah.
No.
To me.
Why are you doing this?
What do you mean, why am I doing this?
Well, because
I'm trying to make it so you can understand it, but you don't. Like, you see, because listen, this is the problem. This is what you two like to do. You want to base a lot of times your arguments in logic, but it's never, none of these arguments are based in logic. It's based in your fandom.
That's what I'm doing. No.
It's based in your fanaticism.
I totally disagree. What I said this morning had nothing to do with fanaticism. The numbers are becoming overwhelming.
Does Kyle Schwarber do on a daily basis? He just hits home runs, right?
But that's it. He hits home runs at a pace that no one's ever hit as a Philly. And for all these years, most people said, we'll never see anyone do what Howard did from a power perspective. We're literally seeing it and more, and I don't think people are grasping onto it. This is the best home run hitter to ever play here. Like, we've never seen this. He's outclassing Howard, and we thought that would never happen.
And Howard played every day.
Right, so
that's why it's not the same to me.
That's fine. Of all the things you said, I think that's the fairest point.
Schwarber plays every day, too.
Well, the field. It's a little bit different. Let me ask you this.
Just a first baseman, by the way.
I know. Let's not pretend he's running around the outfield.
He's still out there.
Let me frame it a different way. Your life is on the line.
Ryan Howard.
Let me finish. You could have one player that's ever suited up for the Phillies.
Ryan Howard.
And the objective is this: the ball has to go over the wall. It can't be a single, a double, a triple. It has to be a home run. It can't be a walk or strikeout. It has to be a home run. And your choices are Schwarber, Howard, Mike Schmidt. You can even throw Tomy if you want, even though he played a very short period of time.
Now you put Mike Schmidt in it. Come on, man.
Well, the answer to me is Schwarber.
Ryan Howard.
Okay.
Ryan Howard.
Yeah. I mean, that's fine that you picked that.
We'll die on this hill.
Does making the question that way make it a little harder?
Of course not.
Mm-mm. He's still for me, it's Ryan Howard. Ryan Howard all day.
But it's more likely that Schwarber hit a home run.
No, it's more likely Ryan Howard.
It's not.
Statistically, it is.
It's not. By a lot now.
There's a fact out there.
Okay, so I'm not, like I said, my fandom for the player is based in my fanaticism.
Right. So we're back to you just like him better. Okay.
No, it's not. Like I said, the beautiful part about being a fan is that I can fan anywhere that I want
to. Bingo.
When you get in an Uber, that's do you pick point. The person who has the best ratings or the person you like look at and like the best?
I get in the Uber that's the closest to getting me to the destination. Because, as a matter of fact, speaking of Uber, the dude that I was riding with this weekend was driving too damn fast, but I didn't say nothing because I was banged up and I just wanted to go home.
Okay.
I wasn't even tripping.
Let's go to Frankie Galloway, and then we'll hear from the Flyers yesterday. Frank, what's up?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good, Frank.
A few things. One on the Sixers here. Real quick, so what you're talking about here, Joel Embiid might be the most talented big man ever, right? Is he going to be considered a top three setter of all time?
Not even close. Well,
no, but he will be a Hall of Famer.
Sure, but not even close to one of the true, true best centers of all time. Not close.
Right. So it's how you break it down. I mean, you can sit there and spin who's the best. But I want to give just to touch on with Elliot was saying, I want to go Lane Johnson when he's healthy. I mean, I never saw an offensive tackle or an offensive lineman who impacts the wins and losses. I mean, I never heard of that. I never saw that. I've been watching football for 45 years.
Crazy.
I never saw that.
Yeah. Frank, I remember sitting there at the pregame show before the playoff game. We got the official word that Lane was out of the game. And like my whole feeling on the game against the Niners, just like, oh, crap, he's not playing. They might lose. Yeah.
I think Mitchell's second. I mean, he is a shutdown corner. They're rare. They stand out, and he does stand out. I put him second. Devontae Smith is underrated. I'm sorry. The guy has hands. I mean, can you name five guys that have better hands than him in the league? I mean, he catches the ball with like, his fingers, like falling out of bounds, like all the time.
Yeah, I don't think I could. I mean, there's some guys, obviously some great receivers in the NFL right now, but in terms of just hands, like when he has a chance to catch it and catch it, he's up there. I think you're right.
Yeah, I'll go Cooper DeJean next. He's solid. He's hard-nosed. And I want to go up with Jalen fifth. For him to put him first, that's just being a homer. Sorry about that. But that's where he is. Anyway, I just want to get that out of the way. Is it in basketball? Isn't it the coach's job to do a lot more than just sub players in and out of the game?
It is. I mean, well, you have to come up with the correct rotation and put the right people with the right people. I mean, beyond other right. stuff. I mean, that's a big part.
Right. Now, I get it. We had 3 to 4 starters out of the lineup, like probably the most part of the season. But how did they come back and look like a total dominant team against the Celtics in a tough environment in a playoff series? And how do you do it? How do you not show up the way they did in the next series? I mean, to me, that's all. To me, that's a lot of coaching. I'm not saying all, but that was a lot of coaching right there. What do you think of that?
I think it was. I mean, I do think
it was a mentally draining series, yeah. though, too.
Yeah, I don't think he did a great job in the next series. And Frank, good phone call, man. We appreciate you. I do think when you go to your bench, Hugh, and you get 0 points, or you're afraid to go
that's
to your
tough.
Bench because it's not, you know, you're
not
going to
get that much, and you wore these guys out because to me, was it game two or maybe game three, where the last 7 minutes of the game
two.
When was it two? Yeah, when they were close.
Yep.
They had an opportunity. They just ran out of gas. So it's one of those things where you could tell, like the Knicks bench, they had more shooters on the bench. They had more guys they could sub in that could give you contributions, and we didn't have that.
And he trusted them. He trusted them. All right, let's get to the Flyers from yesterday, or all the stuff that came out yesterday. But first, can we hear, so Brendan Moore, after the series ended on Saturday night, they're skating off, they're shaking hands, right? And he kind of embraces Rick Tockett, and everyone's kind of wondering, like, what is he saying there? Well, the audio came out. Here it was, Brendan Moore talking to Tockett on the ice after the game ended Saturday.
Hey, great player, man.
Yeah,
good luck to you going forward. Hey, good job, man.
Yeah, thank you.
You represent well.
Yeah, yeah.
Good job, man. Good job.
Yes, thank
you. Good job. Good job, man. Good job. Good job. Better work. Better work. Great job, man. Way to battle. Way to battle. Hey, talk. Hey, good job. Way to bring these guys back, man.
You got it, man.
Take a minute.
You go. You got it.
All right, we're good, Trav. Good job, Tom. Good job. Great series. Good job, boys. Good job, man. Good job.
That was pretty cool. I mean, Hugh, when I saw it, I think everyone was kind of thinking the same thing. Like, he's probably saying to Tockett, great job bringing this thing back, right? It's been so long.
Yeah.
Hearing it was pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, because it is, man. This city loves hockey, man. There's no question about that. From the gatekeepers to the people that have just come back, it's to see this city this excited about hockey, it's been a long time. And to feel like it's going in the right direction, that's even better for next year.
Yeah.
Now you just got to figure out what pieces that you're going to marry with the rest of these guys and try to develop these guys as quickly as you can to keep this feeling going.
It was cool, especially from a former great player and a coach that's had as much success with his program down in Carolina as he has. That was cool to hear. Right, let's hear Dan Vladar yesterday. This was a fun moment talking about his future, and Nina's got 1 year left in that deal, and what's next? Here it was.
I know you probably haven't talked about this or anything yet, but, you know, if the Flyers were interested in extending you this summer, is that something? Is that a phone call you would, I guess, eagerly accept?
Yeah, and if you can ask the same question to Danny B, I'm going to be watching, so we'll see what he says.
That sounds like a man trying to get paid.
I like that. What, ask Danny. I'll be listening to what he says.
Not mad at that. Not mad at that.
I think it's a little bit of a conundrum for them. I mean, in theory, you want to re-sign someone earlier than later, right? You don't want to get to free agency next year. But you also don't want to be wrong. I mean, goalies have good years and then they don't. I like Vladar. I'm glad he's here. I might wait. Look, if he gives them a team-friendly deal, then okay, cool. But if he wants to be paid like the player he just was, I might wait a year, another year of information.
You might run the risk of making him upset too, though.
Right, but what if you run the risk of he goes backwards next year and you're locked yourself into a goalie that might not be that great?
Isn't that a goalie in general, like in hockey? Because you might get one that get hot in the playoffs, but, you know,
they can be pretty up and down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dow Jonesy, as you would say.
Well, I know, but then you're locked in for many years.
Yeah. The one thing that I will say when he got here, he wanted to compete because he wasn't supposed to be the guy.
Mm-hmm.
He became the guy. He needs to be rewarded for that. And he has some moments in the playoffs. He definitely has some moments in the playoffs.
Sure.
He needs to be rewarded for that. Now, to your point, what does that look like? Does that look like, what, max money? I don't know what max money is for goalies in hockey. But I would make him comfortable. I would make him happy to let him know that I appreciate what he's done. And you know, I'm happy he's here.
Let's hear Michkov yesterday through his interpreter talking yesterday afternoon.
Matt Vegas, just how do you overall look at your season?
Hard questions. Что могу сказать? No comments.
How was the relationship with Rick Tocchet this season?
Very simple work relationship. Good relationship.
Mappe, were you given a reason for why you were benched for game four against Carolina?
That's a coach decision. I'm a player that should go on the ice and do my job. If the coach decides I have to miss the game, I have to take it. Go back on the ice and train and work for the best. Unfortunately, we cannot control what we cannot control.
What'd you make of that, Kyle? Can't control what you can't control? The first one he said he had no comment, right? There was a no comment at the beginning?
Yeah. It's weird. I can't, like... It's almost like how you can't read sarcasm over text.
Yeah.
I can't read
through the
emotions through Russian and the interpreting. So, like, you know, I at least just like based off the quotes, I liked what I heard from him. It sounded like he took it on the chin,
mm-hmm.
or like it sounds like they're on the same page in why he was benched and what he needs to work on and how he came into the season and stuff like that. And I thought, just beyond what he said, I thought a lot of the veteran leaders on the team, like Konechny, guys like that, went out of their way to praise him. And talk about sort of things that they want to work on with him in the offseason. So I think I left that overall encouraged about the Michkov situation and the future with him and Tocchet here because that was a little bit up in the air and I was waiting to hear what he had to say, what Tocchet had to say, what some players had to say. I feel better about the whole thing now.
Well, least. Yeah. And look,
it still sounds or feels like it's kind of unresolved though.
Well, yeah, there's still work to be done, it feels yeah. like, to get him to where they want him to go and yeah. to get everyone on the same page. All right, 215-592-9494. Coming up, all your phone calls. I like this one I see up here. I need to teach Joe perspective. I can't wait to learn perspective from... I can't wait. It's going to be... No, it'll be fun. All your phone calls coming up on Maury, on the Schwarber thing, which really became Schwarber and Howard, which it wasn't designed to be. I mean, you could put Schmidt in there. You could put Tomey in there. I'm at the point now where I think Schwarber's the most prolific home run hitter in Phillies history. Agree, disagree, and all that. And we haven't got to it. A little hold the line update. Some Patriots at minicamp talking openly, out loud, about A.J. Brown joining their team. We'll hear that next, and Hugh will, I know, he'll hold the line.
It's hold the line!
The Midday Show, Sports Radio 94 WIP.
You know, winning is different at Fanatics Sportsbook. And now that the playoffs are here, the stakes are even at their highest. So don't wait for that what-if moment. Switch to the only sportsbook that protects all pro player prop basketball props across, that's a lot. Say that fast about 18 times. Across straight parlays and same game parlays, across any first half injury. That's right, people, if you're betting player props in your playbook, whatever it is, if it's points, assists, rebounds, steals, or blocks, Fanatics Sportsbook Fair Play Insurances gives you an edge when it comes to cooking up your parlay. Some books protect your bet from the first quarter, some do nothing at all, but not at Fanatics Sportsbook where they flip losing bets into winning bets. On every night in the association, that means if your player gets injured, boom, in the first half, your bet will play on with all remaining legs, meaning a loss can be turned into a win. Other copy trends. Fanatics Sportsbook, they set the standard. Fair play keeps every first half protected. So bet with the book that always has your back. Fanatics Sportsbook, winning hits different over here. Must be 21+, gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or 1-800-MY-RESET.